When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Fluffy bread, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
Ready to become a master of the minutiae surrounding Cougar athletics? Well, you've come to the right place. This is Cougar Sports with Ben Krenel, right here on ESPN 960.
ESPN 960, Darnell Dixon and Brandon Gurney running the show today for Ben Krenel. We hope you're enjoying your Thursday. Cougars in the pros. You know, we talk a lot in this program about the roster and how it's coming together for BYU football for 2023, but there are some guys, former Cougars, who are looking to make that next step to the professional level, and they're getting an opportunity to audition this week before the Senior Bowl. And we're going to bring in from Pro Football Network Cam Miller to talk about those guys and what they're going through. Cam, thanks for coming on the program today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, as always.
So the 74th Annual Senior Bowl is Saturday, 12:30 on the NFL Network. Game will be played at Hancock-Whitney Stadium at the University of South Alabama. BYU, former BYU players, Jaren Hall, Puka Nacua, Blake Freeland are on the national team. Cam, paint us a picture. What's the vibe like on the sidelines at practices this week? Because it seems like that the practices may even be more important than how they perform in the game, because that's where things get broken down. That's where the scouts and GMs and whoever else is there sees them.
Yeah, if you look at the attendance rate of those who are in attendance, be them scouts, decision makers, media personnel, yeah, it's a mass exodus on Thursday after practice. Those flights out of Mobile are a hard a hot commodity to get onto, because you get out of town, you get out of Dodge as quick as possible. So the practice is significantly more important. I always I like to bucket it into about 33% on-field work, and then the rest of it is off the field too. And that includes how you act on the sidelines, how you are in interviews. You know, it's a 24/7 week for these athletes. You know, not a lot of flights into Mobile, Alabama. You're probably connecting. You're probably on direct flights with some decision makers, no matter where you're flying in from. And so, you know, you could go get a cup of coffee in the morning or after practice, and somebody's going to be at that same spot as well. So it's a huge week for them, not just on the field. What they do there is important, but the interviews and everything else that they're doing for that entire week, not just on the field, but everywhere that they go in Mobile, is huge for all these players.
Let's start with Jaren Hall, BYU quarterback. The other quarterbacks, by the way, on his national team, Jake Haner and Malik Cunningham. What's Jaren's week been like that you've been able to observe?
You know, he came in, he was the best-looking quarterback of his group. Cunningham missed the first day because of the weather. He was the better of the two between him and Jake Haner on the first day. And then I think, you know, Jake got a little bit more reps in the past 2 days and had a couple more wow moments. And I think the narrative will be that Jake Haner maybe outperformed Jaren Hall. But I think both of them did exactly what they needed to do. Jaren a little bit different than Jake. They played very different styles at the position. And Jaren just needed to showcase that he could understand the playbook, get the language, and just truly understand the install of the offense as quick as possible, because, you know, we all know he's going to be an older rookie. And so he's going to either be pressed into duty right away or be counted on as a backup immediately because of that age, you know. And so it's not a discredit to him at all. He proved what he needed to prove. I don't think that either one of them, him or Jake Haner, separated themselves from where they are, right about QB6, QB7, though, in the draft rankings when all is said and done.
How much can a guy help himself during these workouts and this whole week at the Senior Bowl? Because it seems like with all that's available to decision makers in terms of video and statistics and all those things, that they kind of know what they're getting when they see. But maybe how can it change once they get seen close up?
Yeah, I think it goes down in importance or in availability of or room to grow, I guess, from where you play. So the Alabamas and the Georgias, there's not a whole lot for them to gain. I think if you're a fringe level player or a guy at an Alabama that didn't quite get a whole lot of reps, you can move your draft stock up. But Emil Ikior, Tyler Steen on Alabama, we knew who they were. They cemented who they were. So, you know, you have the independents and the group of five players and the FCS players like Cody Malk from North Dakota State, Cole Strange last year from Chattanooga as well. Those guys really can put themselves up, make themselves multiple rounds higher. But for Jaren Hall, you know, it was more cementing what we knew of him and then ultimately seeing the intangible stuff and getting to meet him. So I think the most you can grow, depending on where you were, but for BYU's sake, for Jaren Hall's sake, a round or two difference one way or the other for his specific draft stock this year.
What are the things that Jaren needs to improve on maybe going forward? Some of the deficiencies that maybe you saw that where he can kind of bridge the gap and just become a better prospect.
Yeah, this week I think we saw a couple of them. The decision-making and the speed of it. You know, obviously everybody knows that when you go from high school to college, it's a lot faster. When you go from college to the NFL, it's the ultimate jump and test of somebody's ability to make decisions on the fly quickly. Jaren is he was a little bit reliant on leaving the pocket during day one, day two, and I think today he had a really good throw up the seam to Oregon State's Luke Musgrave Payne Durham, and so that one alone there, that sort of turned that's where I think I would have liked to have seen a few more. Maybe we'll see some of those in the game now, him taking some seam shots up, but it's hard to diagnose too much what he needs to work on. The 3 years, 2 years that we get from all these players, it's hard to then bucket it into 3 days to really see what much they what they can fix and what they need to work on too much. But, you know, decision-making and seeing how they adjust to the speed is what we can learn from these past 3 days.
I think I saw Jaren ran like a 4.5 in the 40. What about his speed maybe attracts him to NFL teams as they evaluate what they need in the draft?
Yeah, the speed and his athleticism to get to the edge. He'll beat defensive ends. He'll beat linebackers. It's often, I think there's a package in the NFL. You know, we've seen maybe the end of the Lamar Jackson era in Baltimore, but it was a creative system that they created to fool defensive coordinators. And I think that there's a road to the NFL early for Jaren because of that. If he gets a creative offensive coordinator, we can see him in sub packages. Ultimately, if he's pressed into duty, he could be a great quarterback as well, I think, in my opinion. And I ultimately think he presses a veteran or whoever he goes to for snaps early as year one, year two, still in the NFL. I don't think there's a whole lot to pick through in his game. It's just making quick decisions, making on the fly, and then ultimately not being too reliant on that athleticism, because that's a short way out the door in the NFL career.
Talking to Cam Miller from Pro Football Network. All right, let's go with Blake Freeland, offensive tackle. What's his week been like out there?
It's been a little bit hit or miss. I think what we saw from him is that his reaction speed was a little bit too slow, or slower than some of the other tackles we have. We know he's one of the bigger ones out there. If Duan Jones from Ohio State measured it and broke the record, we knew Blake would be one of the bigger guys, but he's also slight because of that size and, you know, his athletic build. He wasn't quite as fast as I thought he might be. Some of the speed rushers got him. And obviously it's a little bit more difficult going up against multiple different kinds of pass rushers. The one thing I noticed is that Blake was quick to jump from left to right tackle and getting reps in both. And I know that that'll impress a lot of the decision makers that are watching him, because showcasing that he can try to, you know, make a roster at both spots. He doesn't have to worry about making a roster. I think he's a roster guy from year one. So to me, a little bit of speed issues, but ultimately he can fight with the best of them.
All right. Next up, Puka Nacua, BYU wide receiver. Brandon and I have seen him since high school out here. Went to Washington, then to BYU the last couple of years. From what we're seeing, he's having a pretty good week out there in Mobile.
Yeah, so he hasn't performed or practiced the past 2 days, but I don't know what. We haven't gotten any clarity on that, unfortunately. So day one, he stole the show, though. Tuesday's practice, it was the Puka Nacua show, and every single rep he had, he won. Didn't matter whether it was team drills, seven-on-sevens, or one-on-ones with the defensive backs. It was Puka Nacua who showcased what he's had, and I think that was the biggest thing going in for him specifically. You know, obviously he can't answer. He can't answer the injury questions and why he was unable to see the field for 12 games here and there. But when you do see him on the field, you know exactly how athletic he is and how electric he is with the ball in his hands. But even without, he was winning routes. He was silky smooth. Breaks, not losing speed when he did put his foot in the dirt too. So to me, he showed enough on Tuesday that if it was a decision not to play on Wednesday or Thursday, that was more than enough that we saw him on Tuesday.
Yeah. How much does the injury thing maybe affect his draft status? Because it was a very easy prediction that he was going to kill these practices. I made the prediction earlier this week, and those of us who've seen him, it's like, yeah, he's going to be a guy that's just going to knock the socks off people. But how much of that durability question mark is going to be a thing when it comes to draft time for these NFL teams?
You know, it's good to hear it from him in Mobile talking to those decision makers that I'm sure he talked to. It's one thing to read a media report. It's one thing to read it from it or hear it from an agent, but it's another thing to get him in the room and really ask those questions. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the business. He's probably not more than a sixth or seventh rounder because of that injury history. You don't want to invest too much draft capital in somebody that may or may not have chronic injuries. As sad as it is to say, it's just the nature. It is a business. And once we all get past that, he is as electric as anybody was in this field. If Jaden Reed from Michigan State, you know, turned heads and opened eyes, Puka did that on Tuesday as well, and I think he was right up there with those both athletic guys here. And so it's unfortunate. It'll hurt his draft stock, but ultimately hearing it from them, it's all it takes one of those guys to hear it from him and feel comfortable with selecting him higher.
Cam, what are those conversations like with those players and the decision makers? I mean, as a media member, you're asking certain questions. Are the questions that they get asked by those scouts, are they similar? Or are they what are they like?
You know, I think it varies from team to team, but I ultimately think we're trying to get the same result, so to speak. I think media, we want the story. The decision makers want the answers to whether or not they're going to fit on the team. So I think some are looking at install questions. Do they know the playbook? Do defensive linemen, do they know the difference, truly know the difference between 4-eye and a 4-technique? Do they, you know, can they diagnose coverages as a receiver? Can you understand coverages as a DB? So I think that there's different team schematic questions that these staffs are asking him. But ultimately, I think it's how you fit, too. And I mean, the story about, what was it, the Patriots last year, who were having some players shoot baskets when they walked into their meetings at the combine. So who knows what they're really asking in those decision-making rooms. It's a free-for-all.
Talking to Cam Miller, Pro Football Network. Who's a great story out there that maybe people don't know about that is participating this week in practice and has stood out to you?
So it's hard. I would have said that Cody Mock from North Dakota State was one that nobody knew about. But once he showed up and everybody saw it, he was missing his front teeth and he hadn't cut his hair in what feels like a decade now. And he let his belly show, you know, for Topless Tuesday, as he called it. It's hard to say if he hasn't really impressed. He's a guy who played left tackle at North Dakota State. Moving inside to guard, I think what we saw for him is that he will struggle in the NFL if he plays tackle because he's got shorter arms and the length there will allow him to get sort of dominated by powerful guys. He looked great on the inside. He played all five positions. I saw him lining up during one-on-ones. But then Marte Mapu from Sacramento State, the safety, he was playing linebacker. He had a great week at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. And then they called him up. He flew out to Mobile, and he showed out. I think you look at a safety for the Sac State team that was second in the nation. He played linebacker, and he has coverage abilities. He's a guy I think you'll hear in April called much earlier than people are projecting.
You already said that Puka is probably going to be a late-round guy just because of the durability issues. What do you foresee for Jaren Hall and Blake Freeland, and did they help or hurt their draft prospects initially from what you've seen?
Yeah, I wrote it yesterday, actually. I don't think any of these quarterbacks have moved their draft stock at all. I think, if anything, they've cemented who we all thought that they were. And so for me right now, Jaren and Jake Haener are right there, right after Hendon Hooker. And so if Hendon Hooker was here in attendance, and he didn't throw, but he was interviewing and he was asking questions and he was on the field, coaching up the guys and really in the huddles, which I was really impressed with. So I think they're right. All those three are in the battle for quarterback 5, 6, and 7, you know, after the big four that we're going to hear their names called. And I think Jaren right now is on the fringe. He's either at the tail end of round three, depending on how the compensatory picks fall, and then right at the beginning of round four. Pro Day and Combine can tell us a little bit more about each of them, but I think right there, that's where we're going to see is the meat of the quarterback still.
And what about Blake Freeland?
You know, it's this tackle class when Olu Fashanu left to go back to school to Penn State, really got a kick and lowered the top tier of the tackles. And I think if you look at Connor Galvin from Baylor, also Toilet coming back, Blake Toilet coming back and potentially going to Baylor as well. So I think that there's these guys might have left because I think they're going to hear themselves drafted. I think Blake will be in that second round, third round range. You can't coach size, as they say, and Blake has that in spades.
Last thing for you, Cam. It's the 74th annual Senior Bowl. It's kind of endured, whereas other bowl games have maybe gone away or been de-emphasized. What's the importance of these postseason all-star games for these athletes now as the NFL draft is still a few months away?
It's elevation of some of the players that you may not have heard about, or some of the players that may not have had a chance to showcase everything that they wanted to, or some of the players like Marte Mapu or Cody Mock, who didn't get a chance to play on the national spotlight at all in their careers. And so Luke Musgrave from Oregon State, two games missed in the year, early injury. He's back to health, and he's perfectly fine. So I think it's that. It's for the players that maybe aren't the top 15, the top 20s, the top 31 picks this year, which is why we hardly saw any first-round locks, as they'll call them, in action. It's really just to elevate those players. It's for these scouts to get out and see them. And ultimately, it's for the face-to-face interviews. So like I said, I think 33% of it is what the on-field performances look like. The rest of it is all in-person. You got to be able to win over general managers and decision-makers, showcase that you're smart enough to be on the team. But ultimately, if you're not, and if you might have some character concerns, they're going to be able to weed that out pretty quickly.
Cam, we appreciate your time. Be safe out there. Get home safely. And keep doing the good work, all right? Where can BYU fans check out your work and your comments about the Senior Bowl practices and the Senior Bowl?
Easy enough. We'll have live coverage of the Shrine Bowl tonight, too. Can't forget the other bowl game out there in Vegas. But profootballnetwork.com. And then the easiest is just to go to Twitter, Cam Mellor, M-E-L-L-O-R. I appreciate you guys for having me.
Very good. Thanks, Cam. Talk to you soon.
Cam is a machine. I love having him on. I mean, what a thorough breakdown that is. That was fantastic. I was a little disappointed with he says it wasn't a surprise about Jared Allen. I'm a little surprised by that, to be honest with you.
You consider the fact that he didn't play in the bowl game. It's been a while since he's had live action, you know what I mean? We're talking, at least a month since he's done anything but just train. So you would expect there to be, I would expect there to be maybe a little bit of rust as they go through and start to get back into the swing of things. I like that Jaron ran a 4.5, and it was interesting for me for Cam to say because of his age he would be expected to be a backup right away as opposed to a kid coming, that's 22 years old. I wonder about that. I don't know. I don't know. That's just I didn't really thought of that in terms of. All we hear about with age is, well, he's got to get into the NFL now because he's so old that, he'll reach his peak and then he'll be out of the league before he gets a chance. BYU players who are older because of missions, that you always hear that, but I hadn't heard that part of it where there's a more expected of them because they're older.
Yeah. He was disappointed with Blake Freeland's speed. That's a little surprising as well. It's just like Blake Freeland's been so peerless for BYU. What can you criticize? And then seeing Eddie criticism aligned, it was like, what? Wait? What? This is the guy that locked down. But you like that. You like guys that can break these guys down far better than we can. Getting that live competition and whatnot. I am a little hesitant. Well, I don't know. When you have Blake Freeland, he said a second round, possibly top of the third round would be where he sees him. And if he solidifies that, I mean, did any of us have any higher expectations?
No, I think that's about – and I think that Cam's point was most of the guys just solidified who they are, who they thought they were.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so much tape that's available out there, video now, to be seen. Everybody's on TV all the time. I think that the guys who make those decisions and the scouts, they can watch and they can see, and they've been doing this long enough where I think that they get a pretty good read.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought.
Where that guy's going to be.
Yeah. I don't know why Puka didn't participate the second day, but to me, that's not a good move. If he was physically able, well, what's the biggest question mark? Durability, right? It's like, well, show these guys you can, I don't know, but for a non-contact thing, maybe it's not a thing. I don't know, but to me, it's like, why are you out there? But again, maybe he killed it enough that first day. It's like, well, I'm done. You guys know what I am, so I don't know.
Well, best of luck to those guys. The game, as we mentioned, is Saturday, 12:30 p.m. on the NFL Network, and it'll be played at Hancock Whitney Stadium in the University of South Alabama. And it's really important for Jaren Hall, Puka Nacua, and Blake Freeland to play well. But as Cam was saying, that's 30% is the practices and the interviews that you do during the week, and I think that those guys are all going to excel at those. I think those guys. Although I wonder, you know, with Puka, he always tends to laugh at the end of all his comments. Just kind of that's who he is, yeah. Right? Where Jaren is super serious when he's answering the questions. He's not goofy at all, but Puka's still a little bit goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Puka. How can you not love Puka? All the Nacuas were.
All the Nacuas were awesome. It's just too bad we only had Samson for 1 year and Puka for just two.
I still feel cheated by how little BYU was able to get from Puka because he's so good.
So much fun to watch.
So good.
And maybe as he plays professional football, maybe BYU fans will adopt whatever team he goes to and get a chance to see more Puka because more Puka is always good.
Very easy to cheer for.
ESPN 960, Darnell Dixon and Brandon Gurney sitting in for Ben Crittle. We'll come back on the other side of this break with one of our favorite guests, Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman. We'll talk about some Big 12 football on the other side, ESPN 960 Sports.
It's time to celebrate the greatest team sport known to man, where modern-day gladiators collide all for the glory of the gridiron. We'll talk some college football on Cougar Sports with Ben Crittle.
ESPN 960, we hope you're having a good Thursday. Darnell Dixon and Brandon Gurney sitting in for Ben Crittle, although he is over our shoulder in this giant poster behind us. He's never fully gone, but he will return next week. Tomorrow, I'm going to be co-host along with Bryce Larson.
Whoa.
That's the plan. That's what I was told. We'll see how that works. But today it's Brandon and I. We're having a great day talking about BYU football, BYU scheduling, BYU roster. We even have some basketball coming up, so stay tuned for that. Right now we're going to go out to the phone lines and bring in from the Oklahoman, Barry Trammell. Hi, Barry. What's up today?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How's things in Salt Lake City?
Well, it's cold, but it's kind of interesting. I was looking at, you know, generally February is a pretty slow month for college football over the years, but more and more it's become the go-to for the offseason. We've got the Big 12 schedule release. We've got a second signing day. I think people out here are pretty excited about the Big 12 and anything that brings them a little closer to it, they get even more excited. How are things out in your way as far as the Big 12 scheduling announcement?
Oh, everybody was looking forward to it. Now everybody's trying to figure out who got cheated and, you know, who got hit with a tough schedule, but it's impossible to know in the Big 12 because you never know from year to year anymore who's going to be good. So nobody can really claim that they got shorted in this thing. You're right about the excitement, though. 7 weeks from today, I'm sorry, 7 months from today is opening day, unless somebody moves the game to Thursday night, which I guess is possible. But it's going to be wild. We don't. So many unknowns in the Big 12 anymore. Is OU and Texas going to stay? Or who's going to be good? Now we got the four new schools. Three of the four had great years in 21. All of them had, I'd say, good, solid years in 22. And just, you know, who could win it? Nobody knows. And the schedule came out, and everybody's deciphering it and really not coming into any consensus, I would say.
Well, Barry, you were there when, you know, Nebraska leaves, Colorado and Missouri. You've seen West Virginia come in. Now you see BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF joining the conference, with Texas and Oklahoma leaving. How has this conference been able to kind of maintain its status? Has it maintained its status? I mean, we know things change and we get used to that, but anytime there's conference realignment, it seems pretty seismic, not just for the schools going in and out, but for the conference itself. So what's the relative health of this conference right now?
Well, it's better than it has been. And I think the long-term future's solid, but the Big 12 status overall has dipped dramatically. Now, people won't believe me, but I promise you it's true. The SEC did not always dominate college football. They did not always run college football. As recently as the mid-2000s, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, the Big 12 and, frankly, some of the other conferences as well, could claim equal status with the SEC. Since then, we've had a slow decline in everybody else's status, elevation of the SEC, and the Big 12, because of realignment, took the biggest hit on that. And losing Nebraska and A&M, not so much Missouri and Colorado, but Nebraska and A&M really dented the conference. And West Virginia and TCU have been fine members and good additions. And heck, Horned Frogs are one of the last two teams standing this year. So they've recovered nicely, but the status is not what it used to be. And, you know, can they get it back onto a level playing field with the Big Ten and the SEC? Maybe, but the economics are such that, you know, the television rights are so powerful with the SEC and the Big Ten that the other three conferences will always be playing from behind. But still, it's good football, and, you know, great teams can emerge. So I think it's going to be a fun conference. It's a good conference. And somebody like Brigham Young, it's sort of a blank landscape. Just whatever the Cougars want to make of it is sort of theirs for the asking, because the ceiling is gone. This is a sport that keeps its foot on schools and programs for decade after decade. And the Big 12 did that for a lot of years with Oklahoma dominating. And that's not the case anymore. The last 3 years, we've had six different schools in the conference title game. And the last 2 years, the Big 12 title game has matched teams that were predicted, fifth and seventh and fourth and sixth in the preseason poll. So it's there for the taking. You'll have to learn a little bit about some of our history. I'm actually a history major and know all about Utah and the Mormon War and all that stuff. Most people out here don't know much about it. I don't expect you guys to know much about Oklahoma history, but we had these things called land runs where they just opened up, you know, hundreds of miles of free land to anybody that could go and claim it. And that's sort of what we've got in Big 12 football, particularly after Oklahoma and Texas leave. It's there for the taking, and almost every program can make a case to have a fighting chance to be a mover and a shaker in Big 12 football.
Barry, I was reading some of your thoughts on the scheduling, and one of the things that came up was the non-Saturday games. There are more this year in the Big 12, according to the schedule that we just looked at. And BYU, over the course of the last 11 or 12 years, has played a lot of those games with being able to kind of roll with the punches, and their relationship with ESPN being willing to play those games. But from what I've seen, most of the Big 12 teams prefer that Saturday afternoon game.
Yeah, or Saturday night.
Right.
People kick and scream over the Thursday or Friday games. Oklahoma and Texas refuse to play them. Texas has played some Thanksgiving Friday games. Oklahoma hadn't done that since the Nebraska glory days of the 80s. But we're seeing more and more of it. And this year we've got an Oklahoma TCU on a Friday night. We've got on Thanksgiving Friday. We've got Oklahoma State, Kansas State on a Friday. We've got West Virginia's playing somebody. They're playing Houston on a Thursday, I think. BYU is playing Cincinnati on that Friday, which I think is the general conference weekend.
That's right, yeah.
So the Cougars, you know, I actually talked to Tom Homo last night, and he gave me a little insight, which you guys would know all about, and your listeners would. I don't claim to be an expert, but actually that works out very well for BYU. So I think you'll see more and more of that, because it gives the league a chance to spotlight the conference in apart from the morass of Saturday, where you could have three or four marquee games in every television time window. So those Thursday and Friday games will help out. The one thing I would like to have seen, I suggested this to I wrote about it, and then I suggested it to the new commissioner. I think the Big 12 launch is rather pathetic. Those first 3 weeks, we got a few games that are pretty good, but the majority of the games are easy to miss. I mean, BYU knows that well, and I know they had to piece together a schedule, but they opened with Sam Houston and Southern Utah. Oklahoma State's opening with Central Arkansas. Texas opens with Rice. Tech's playing Wyoming. Just not good games. I thought we could put together a schedule where on opening week you could have the four newcomers play conference games against longtime Big 12 members, and maybe even play like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Labor Day night, a stretch of games, and really, celebrate the conference and kick it off. And you'd have to juggle some non-conference games. But Brett Yormark liked the idea, but he didn't really, it's hard to get people to mess with their schedules. Coaches are the biggest impediment to it. So that's my biggest gripe with the schedule. We're all talking about the conference schedule, but that non-conference schedule is just not very good for the Big 12.
Last week on the show, right after the schedule was released, we put a poll question to the listeners, which game fans are most excited to see, and Oklahoma won by quite a large margin. Fans are really excited for the Sooners to come to Provo just because of the brand and whatnot. But it seems like last year a lot of luster came off that brand, and some pretty shocking results for Oklahoma. What kind of team can be what you fans expect, and how shocking were the results last year? Just what's going on with the Sooners?
Well, a couple things. One is the two games in particular were very, very hard to swallow for Sooner Nation. They went to TCU and got rolled 55-24. Quarterback Dylan Gabriel got a concussion midway through the second quarter. Now, it was 34-10 when he got hurt. So it was not going well, and it was not going to go well. But that caused him to miss the next week's game against Texas, and they got beat 49-0. The backup quarterback situation was just a disaster. And Brent Venables struggled, just to be honest with you, in his first year coaching the Sooners. That did not go well. But then OU sort of stabilized, and down the stretch, what they ended up doing was just losing a bunch of close games. They lost five one-possession games and didn't win any. So if it got close, the Sooners lost. The year before, Oklahoma went 6-1, I think it was, in one-possession games. Those things even out over time. So OU really wasn't a 6-7 team. They were more like an 8-4 team last year, which is still not up to OU standards. They played much better in the bowl game against Florida State. Florida State had virtually its whole team. OU was missing a bunch of guys, and the Sooners played them really tough. So there's a lot of encouragement there. I don't think OU is going to be up to its historic Lincoln Riley level, but they're going to be better than they were a year ago. I don't think there's any doubt. They've got a good quarterback in Dylan Gabriel. If he stays healthy, they're going to be fine on offense, and we'll see about the defense. But I would expect that OU comes to Provo. That's the week before Thanksgiving, I think. Yeah. I bet OU goes to Provo with at least a chance of making it to Arlington for the title game. Heck, who knows? Maybe Brigham Young's in the same boat. It could be a showdown game. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see vintage Oklahoma, but I also don't think you're going to see sort of the disaster that you saw this past season.
Yeah, November 18th, BYU hosts Oklahoma and then finishes the Big 12 schedule at, in Stillwater against Oklahoma State on Thanksgiving weekend. That'll be big for BYU to finish strong. Barry, we appreciate your time. Always good to talk to you. Now that we're Big 12 compadres, it's even better. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Hey, thanks a lot. Good luck to the Cougs.
Thanks. Barry Trammell from the Oklahoman. Been there, done that. That's why I asked him about kind of how the Big 12 has sort of evolved and him bringing up that, yeah, at one point the Big 12 was the bomb and they were competing with the SEC. And I think that one of the things that's changed over the years is the SEC just started sinking more and more and more and more money into their programs to the point where, you know, what are you going to do to compete with that? It makes it crazy.
Yeah, it's insane just how the SEC has separated itself. I was kind of encouraged by the Big Ten having the two teams in the college football playoff, the SEC just with one team. That hasn't happened very often. But then Georgia kind of slammed out on everyone's like, really? This is the last team standing? I mean, that championship game was so terrible.
That was bad, yeah.
It was really hard for me to believe that was the result. But yeah, I'm excited. And I'm kind of bummed that Texas and Oklahoma are leaving. It'd be great, but BYU probably wouldn't be in the spot it's in right now if Texas and Oklahoma weren't leaving.
Yeah, so BYU fans will take it anyway. All right, coming up next on the program, Cougar Insider Report. That is Brandon Gurney and Darnell Dixon. We're both here, and we're going to stay here until the end of the show. We promised Ben we wouldn't leave too early, so he'll be happy. ESPN 960, we'll come back after this.
You're listening to Cougar Sports with Ben Crittle, and it's time for a Cougar Insider Report. Now let's get that proprietary inside scoop on Cougar Sports from Crittle.
ESPN 960, the Cougar Insider Report, brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Get that lean back into your life. Don't let ED slow down your relationships. Head to WasatchMedicalClinic.com to find out more. WasatchMedicalClinic.com. Before we get to some sound from Jay Hill, I did come across this tweet I thought was some pretty interesting. I don't know if it's insider information, but it does bring about some thoughts. And that is, so Brent Hine of the Ogden Standard Examiner on one of his tweets says, it's also very wild that Utah has six Division I football programs, considering the population in the state of Utah. It says Washington, a little more than two times the population, has three. Idaho has three. Nevada, about the same population as Utah, has two. But with BYU, Utah, Weber State, Utah State, Utah Tech, and Southern Utah, that's six. Six Division I football programs. And the fact that I think that more and more schools are starting to realize there are good football players coming out of the state of Utah, getting recruited, more guys that are ready to go and contributing at Pac-12 schools and Big 12 schools. I just find that pretty interesting that the state of Utah can't support that many Division I. And it didn't used to be that way, obviously, because Utah Tech at one point was Dixie State, which was a junior college. Southern Utah was lower Division II, all those things. But anyway,
there's also
Division I, Division I AA.
Yeah, there's some reports out that the Western Athletic Conference on the football side of things are trying to make a move to FBS football instead of being an FCS league. So could be a chance for SUU and Utah Tech to move up to FBS football here in the next 5 to 10 years. So.
Wow.
Weber State might be left behind as the only FCS conference or only FCS program.
We do want to play a little bit of sound for you in this segment from the BYU access to the coaches during the second signing day, which was a couple of days ago. We're going to talk with Jay Hill first and go into some of the questions he was asked, and we'll listen to a little bit of what he said. Let me see if I can bring it up. I'm having trouble getting there. What's wrong with my computer? All right. Jay Hill, during signing day press conference yesterday. First question is, what have you learned about the program as you have gone through the process of recruiting this last month?
Well, it's been a fun process, you know, evaluating the current players Also trying to, when we first got hired, we were right in the middle of who they were already getting ready to sign. So just being able to evaluate that first class or that first group that we signed back in December. And then, you know, getting back on the recruiting trail in January was big. And the reality is BYU has a great name out there right now. We can get in on some big time guys. And I look forward to the recruiting battles of the future. So I think we're in a good spot. We had some holes we needed to fill. I think we've done a pretty good job of addressing that. And then, you know, as things progress forward, we'll continue to look at other areas we need to get better at.
One of the things that stood out to me with this whole conversation with the coaches yesterday was they were grateful for the guys that they got, specifically because they said they really had to battle to bring these guys in. And I think as you look at BYU recruiting, you think, oh, there's guys that they just automatically want to go to BYU and you don't have to work very hard to get them. I think those days are long gone. I think there are plenty of opportunities for good Utah and LDS players to go play at the next level. And BYU has to work hard. And I think most people would agree, and Brandon, maybe you have a topic that you want to discuss on this, but that BYU tries harder. And they need to try harder with especially legacy kids that they have lost in the past.
Yeah, that's been a criticism for BYU for as long as I've covered recruiting, to be honest with you, that a lot of recruits feel that because they're LDS and they fit the BYU lifestyle perfectly and that they're grew up BYU fans, that BYU's lazy in recruiting them. And you see specific examples of this every year. Just Spencer Fano this past year. There's been a lot of things where BYU really needs to shore that up, and that's been my biggest criticism of the defensive staff. I don't think it's been enough work, guys pounding the pavement, doing what's necessary. I heard an anecdote from a guy that says, wow, BYU's starting to send letters every day that's really obnoxious that other schools have done all the time, but it's kind of necessary. You kind of just have to fawn over these kids. Right? You got to do it that way. And I think that's what's being shored up with Jay Hill and Kelly Poppingham and this defensive staff. And I think it's going to yield a lot of positive dividends.
I think coaching is a profession that changes over the course of time. And what may have worked for you 5 years ago, in any regard, whether it's drills, whether it's recruiting, whether it's your one-on-one interviews with kids, you do have to evolve as a coach. And I think we see sometimes, and it happens at every level, that the evolution isn't fast enough and you stick to the way things used to work and it's different. The kids are different now. The way they recruit it is different. The way that they recruit themselves, the way that they promote themselves is different. I mean, I'm still old school, and sometimes when I see I've just been offered by so-and-so on Twitter, I kind of roll my eyes a little bit like, who cares? Well, you know what?
Seriously.
That's the way it's done now.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for coaches to evolve and become better at what they do. I'm sure there's opportunities for them to grow as coaches at clinics and things like that. But the way that BYU recruits needed to change, and I think that the new guys that they've got have put themselves in a position to do better. And Jay Hill has always had a reputation as being a very good recruiter.
Yeah.
And this is where he's been able to not only be a good recruiter, but to have BYU backing him up on this, where it's not like, hey, come to Ogden to Weber State. I mean, I have nothing against Weber State, but they are an FCS program, right? Now you're just talking about BYU going to the Big 12, an FBS program, a Power 5. This is what's behind me, and I think Jay Hill is really going to excel at this. All right, Jay Hill, also, were there certain positions that you identified as a need for this team, or were you just going after guys that had the size and look of a P5 guy?
Yeah, I think it's both. I felt like we needed to really shore up the interior of our defensive line. So that's where we did take a couple players. And then the reality is we're never going to turn down a big-time guy. I don't care if we have enough scholarships already used at that spot. We'll never turn down a big-time guy. So the rest of the people we're looking at right now are those guys, the ones that fit the mold of Power 5 guys that can compete in the Big 12.
Democratic, the way he said that, but certainly he looked at the current talent and he looked at the current performance and realized the defensive line needed an upgrade.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of guys coming in that are, as I said before in the program, they're hungry. They want to show and prove that they can play at this level, and they want to play that aggressive style of defense that Jay Hill's talked about, and here's their opportunity.
They need to stop the run. That's all it is, just stop the run. How do you stop the middle? You put guys like David Lawtu and Stone Mulitalo, guys you cannot move in the middle of that line. Jackson Cravens, that's what BYU needs. They've had quality guys, but those guys have been hurt a lot, and there hasn't been sufficient depth behind them. So I love having seen this addressed. I still think BYU needs more talent on that defensive front. Yeah, you want guys that are NFL quality. And while BYU shore that up, it's still got to get better, in my opinion. But they've made the necessary moves for what it could get, right, initially. But I do expect that to continue to improve over time.
And what happens when you have a defensive line that can chew up blocks and hold their ground is you allow guys like Ben Bywater and Max Tooley to make big hits and make big plays at linebacker. What was happening this year, from what we were told, was that the offensive linemen were getting past the defensive line and getting to the second level blocking, and they were eating up those two linebackers because they didn't hold at the line of scrimmage well enough. And so if BYU can do that against the run, they will be better this year, and they're going to face some better teams, no question at times. ESPN Sports 960. Coming up next, we're going to do a little bit of a switch and talk some basketball with Ken Pomeroy of Ken Pom Ratings. That's next on ESPN 960.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.